All right, good morning. Welcome to this session. Do you have something you want to say?
Yes. Good morning, everyone. My name is Naomi. I'm the room monitor for this session. Just a friendly reminder to please turn off your cell phones. If you're collecting continuing education units, please sign the sheet in the back right now and then check in with me at the end of the session. And this session is being recorded, so a reminder that if you have any questions or comments, please come up and use the microphones.
All right, thank you for that. Well, welcome to this session, looking at dreams about God and research on that theme, drawing on long-term dream journals, both contemporary and, in my case, a historical dream journal. And these presentations will be using different methodologies and coming at the subject from different angles, so I'm not quite sure what to expect from my co-panelists, but I'm looking forward to it. So our first presenter, Nori Muster, a writer and journalist, a long-term dream journal keeper, who is going to share her latest research with us.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. I wanted to start out by acknowledging, thanking ASD and DSF for helping me complete this phase of my study. They were really instrumental in, I won the DSF grant and was able to travel to Santa Barbara for 4 weeks this year, which is not cheap. And I spent that time in the library transcribing my dream journals. And so just a few statistics and facts about the collection. I was in ISKCON for 10 years when I was younger. It's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And I wrote a memoir about it, which you can look at. I brought a copy with me. The first 10 years of my journals covers the 10 years that I was in ISKCON. So these are the dreams and memories from being a Hare Krishna devotee. The journals span 1979 to 1989. And there were 37 notebooks, 2,006 daytime notations, 1,313 dreams recorded, and the transcript is 1,223 pages. So I went through, after I finished transcribing the journals, this transcript became like a really fun toy, like you might get on Christmas morning. And I've gone through it, I've tagged all the main characters, and I counted them, and I can put the thing through Excel, and it'll come out, I can sort it, I can get all the dreams, because they're under D, and then I can get all the notations under N. I can single out the dreams with the tags, or the dreams with the tags and the dreams. You know, the date, tags, and dreams. And the notations, I can get the notations, date, and tags, and the first paragraph of the notations, because then Excel sends them all different ways. So one of the things that stands out about this collection is the language, because when you enter a religious cult, you learn a whole new language. And in ISKCON, the language we learned was mostly Sanskrit and Bengali words, and also the cult jargon. So one of the, for example, ecstatic. We were always ecstatic, you know. Like everything was ecstatic, and that word appears about 100 times in the transcript. And I'm gonna create a before and after set. So this is before cult recovery, so it's when I was in the group. And then I was a fringy for about 10 years while I wrote my memoir and got my master's degree, and then the after series will begin after I quit going to temples, which was in 1998. So it's been about 20 years since I've gone to any Hare Krishna temples or participated in anything like that. So I want to share some dreams with you. This panel is Dreams of God, so I picked out dreams about God, and I called God Krishna in the group, and also Jagannath, which is another form of Krishna. So I brought Jagannath with me. This is Jagannath. And it's from Orissa. It's a form of Krishna from Orissa that they take on those big carts. So that's where the word Juggernaut came from, because these big carts would come lumbering down the street with these deities on them. And they were sort of the deities of the people. They weren't like Krishna's more for the Brahmins and the upper classes, but this was a form of Krishna for the people. So I always related to Juggernaut. So the first dream about Juggernaut, I put these in chronological order. So this is a dream dated May 31st, 1987, and it's abridged. I'm trying to defend ISKCON's reputation with public relations. Some friends came dressed in clown and animal outfits to attack me, and I was happy laughing with them and wanting to take and fix lots of mismatched juggernauts. So I would pick these things up at devotee yard sales, and sometimes they would be mismatched, like you'd have a really big juggernaut and then a little Balaram and Subhadra. So they would just, you know, I'd get them at yard sales or people would bring them to me to paint. So that was a dream about that. The second juggernaut I call Earthquake Threat. This one was from November 25th, 1987, and it's abridged. Everyone leaving town at a threat of a big earthquake. I stay with an apartment full of juggernaut deities chanting my rounds. I only had a few rounds done though throughout the dream. So that's an anxiety thing, because we had these pre-dawn ceremonies and you had to chant for 2 hours on your beads. And if you didn't get the chanting done, for me it was like I always felt kind of nervous until I got all my sadhana done. This one's called Bus Trip, and it's February 18th, 1988. I was going to take deities to a temple up the coast for people. Juggernaut for Yashoda, Krishna and Balaram for Karta, and my Gornitai deities and other deities. A bus was leaving, but I missed it. And later I learned that the deities made it on the bus and everything was okay. Okay, this is one, we had a lot of crime in the group. It was really a criminal infested religious cult. And I worked in the PR department, so I was always trying to help the organization. So this is a dream dated October 17, 1986. I dreamed that people I know were deeply involved in the murder the grand jury is investigating. We did everything we could to cover up the crimes of ISKCON. There were juggernaut deities with knots in them, according to our impurities. So we had there was a murder in Los Angeles on May 22nd, 1986, and a friend of mine was murdered by some other Hare Krishnas. And we did the best we could to cover it up, to cover up the murder, by saying, telling the media, well, this guy was excommunicated before it happened, and the shooter was excommunicated. It wasn't really our people that killed each other. You know, just lying to the media. And so the dream just said, that the deity, which these are made of wood, I don't know how well you can see it from back there, but that the deities would have knots in them, according to our impurities. So then I want to talk about the process of transcribing the dreams. So first of all, when I joined the Hare Krishnas, I was a senior at UCSB, and I lived in Isla Vista, which is the college town. And I actually moved into the temple the day after graduation, and I wore a sari to graduation. So I was being indoctrinated while I was a senior there. And then just by coincidence, UCSB has the largest collection of cultic material. So when I wanted to clean out my closet and get rid of all this documentation, they were one of the first people I called besides my publisher. And they said, yeah, we want your stuff, you know, send it over, send us your journals, whatever you got. So I just sent them all this stuff in 2005. And so that was why I couldn't just transcribe the dream journals, because they were in a library and they don't give it back to you, so usually. So I had to travel there. So transcribing the dreams in the city where I joined the Hare Krishnas was really deeply meaningful to me. And it was like a gestalt that I could close by transcribing the dreams there. It it brought a lot of the stuff back. So I walked by the apartment where I lived, which I do sometimes when I go there. And this time I found the preaching center, which I had never bothered to do before. And I walked by that and took a picture of it. And so it's like a real trip through nostalgia. And so the dream journals, at the beginning, the first 7 years of dream journals were my indoctrination, where we weren't really allowed to keep journals, and I had kept a journal, but I had to throw it all away when I moved in the temple. So I wanted to start keeping a journal again, and they said I could, but all I could write about was my notes from the classes, my realizations, my prayers, and my sadhana, like what time I finished my rounds or how the morning program was. So the only time they would allow you to write down dreams was if it was about God or about your guru. So mostly the first 100 dreams I recorded were those kind of dreams. And then later I got permission from my boss, because I was having these bad nightmares about my old friends. No wonder. So then the last 3 years were full-on writer's journals, like dreams, first drafts of articles. I worked on their newspaper, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I noticed when I was transcribing, it was like notation, dream, notation, dream, notation, dream. Like every night I had a dream, and every day I wrote something down. So it was, when I transcribed it, I could remember most of the daytime things that happened, like, oh yeah, I remember when that happened, and oh, I remember that, or I remember that person. But when I did the dreams, even though there were 1,300 dreams, I only remembered less than about a dozen where I could actually remember the dream. So I was able to put it together. It was like a jigsaw puzzle, or it's one of those stereo views where you can see three-dimensionally. And I could see my daytime life, where I was really not proud of myself, you know, talking in jargon and just kind of glassy-eyed devotee, you know, cult member. But then the dreams were so compassionate. They didn't judge me. They didn't weren't mad at me. They would just take what I'd done during the day and, you know, kind of review it or go over it in a really loving and accepting way. Forgiving and accepting, like when we were doing that cover up for the murder, it didn't say like, oh, you're a bad person. It just said you have impurities, like that you can see. They could see, my dreams could see. So it was like a really gentle healing thing. And the process of, I didn't want to go back there. Like I thought about, well, where should I start with this dream journal? It's like 38 years worth of dreams. Where do I start with this? Well, I definitely don't want to go back to my 40s. Definitely don't want to go back to my 30s. And I really don't want to go back to the Hare Krishna years. That is just awful. I'll do that last, you know. But then I thought, well, you know, I'll start at the beginning. And, you know, so, but then when I was done transcribing it, it was just like such a meaningful thing to me. It was really life-changing. It got rid of some personal, like, negative things about myself. Like, for all these decades, I was criticizing myself really harshly. Like, how could you be in that stupid group? And when I had to admit to people that I was in that group, I always felt kind of bad about myself. And I just, you know, especially, like, even reading it now, some of the stuff is just really uncomfortable for me. Like, you know, you're talking in brainwash. Like, I wasn't myself, and it was just uncomfortable. But I'm reading the last 3 years. The last 3 years of the journal was my disillusionment. So I became disillusioned with the experience gradually, and then to the point where I left at the end of 1988. And it was really helpful because I reviewed it, and I saw how I ended up leaving. And my husband and I were able to find a way to make a living besides just depending on the group. So we were able to move away from it and get away from it, because when we were ready. So I want to read, I have a couple dreams here that use the word Krishna as God. So I'm going to share those too. This was really kind of an initiation dream. This is one of the earliest dreams I recorded. This is from 1980. So it was a way to say goodbye to my friends, my old friends, and I carried my friends with me through the experience, because even though I didn't see my old friends, I dreamed about them, because I had completely cut myself off from my previous life. So this is the dream. This morning I had a dream that I was going around seeing old friends, and we all rolled in ecstasy together. That means when we would go to the sacred holy place, we would roll in ecstasy and get the dust of the holy place on us. So that's what that means. But I knew I wouldn't see them again for a long time. And I gave one of the friends an amethyst for me, to fix for me. Then I dreamed that I went into the altar. I secretly went into the altar to see the deities, and the deities put a magical spell over everything and danced all around like a fairy waltz. This is another dream. This is from March 12th or 13th, just sit higher. I encountered two crazy men and delayed them. The authorities came and captured them and put them on a train. And then the train went under a tunnel, and then it went off the track, and the conductor roped it and pulled it back on. And then I showed him my pictures of Krishna. He wanted to know what Krishna looked like. I didn't have an exact picture of him, but came very close. And it was the beginning of Krishna consciousness, when trains were just starting too. So I think my dreams about God were my projection of God, and that I didn't have the exact picture of Krishna, but I had one that was very close. Like, I didn't have a snapshot of Krishna, but I had a drawing or a painting that I could share. This is one of my favorite dreams. This was on my birthday in 1986 when I turned 30. And it was the beginning of my disillusionment. This was before I was disillusioned. So this is the full dream. A little girl representing Krishna would wait by some incense, and when the ashes would fall, she would catch them in her hand and give them to me. And it was like we were playing a game. So this was like my playful relationship with Krishna. And then this is the last dream. This is dated December 26, 1987. I go to the temple to make garlands. Ramadasi says the deities are mad at me. So that's my projection. And that was what they taught us in the classes, that when Krishna was mad at you, or when you did something, like if you gossiped about the leaders or said something bad about the gurus, then Krishna would be mad at you. And then you would get some kind of retribution for it, to teach you. So that was part of their philosophy. Anyway, so that's about 15 minutes. I could talk longer, but if anyone has any questions, we could sort of direct the conversation in the area that you'd like to talk about.
Hi, good morning. 15 minutes, I mean, it's there's so much stuff there. I mean, I have like a million questions, but I guess the two that come to mind are, you talked about your disillusionment. I'm wondering if the dreams had a part in leading you there, or were they just more of a manifestation of that decision? I mean, my question first. And the second question was, I'm just wondering how your dreams of God are now compared to the way they were before.
Okay.
How that changed. Thank you.
The reason that I asked for permission to keep a dream journal was because I was having a reoccurring nightmare about a friend of mine that I left in the world when I joined. And in the dream where I give one of my friends an amethyst, I think it was him, because we were both born in February, about a year apart, and he was a friend that I grew up with. And I asked him to fix the amethyst for me. And then later, after I got into my 40s and I was out of the group fully, I got together with him, and we were together for 10 years. And he did fix a lot of my problem. He hated that organization. He knew it was full of criminals, and he helped me see it in a good light. But at the time, I was having these dreams about him, and every time I would wake up from a dream about him, I'd just be like, it was like the worst nightmare ever, and it was just really bothering me. So I asked my boss, I told him about the dreams, and he knew the family, he knew these people. And so he said, yeah, go ahead and keep a dream journal. It was like special permission. So I think beyond that, the dreams, they taught us in ISKCON that your dreams are just nothing. They don't mean anything. It just means you ate something bad before you went to sleep. So I didn't really, beyond like trying to get rid of the nightmares, I don't think the dreams played a part in my leaving, but the nightmares did go away after I started living with Kyle later. And the second question was how are my dreams different now? Well, we're gonna find out because I'm gonna transcribe my 40s, hopefully next year. And in my 40s, I was with Kyle, I was out of the organization, I put a lot of distance between myself and the organization. So I'm expecting that the dreams will be different in the sense that they'll have fewer Sanskrit words, fewer Sanskrit and Bengali words, fewer ISKCON jargon, mostly language. Like I'm trying to think, like what makes a cult dream different from a regular dream? So the only thing I've come up with so far is that, oops, stopped recording, all right. The only difference is that the language, like, and a lot of cult involvement is the language because it's like a secret little club and everyone talks in code to each other and outside people are like, you know, or if you try to talk to, like my mom, I remember she got really upset one time because I mailed her this long letter that quoted all these Bhagavad Gita verses, and she said when she got the letter she was just crying and it upset her. Because, you know, when your kid's in a cult, you can't talk to them. They're just like, oh, you've got to read the Bhagavad Gita. It's ecstatic. It's all in there. You know, and you talk like crazy talk. And so I'm thinking that my after series will have a lot less Sanskrit names and words in it. So maybe there will be other differences. I'll have to... Because now, like, the world of psychology does not acknowledge dreams and they don't acknowledge cults. And one thing I've thought about is the similarity between the word nightmare and the word cult. Nobody likes to use the word cult because you're automatically insulting whatever group you study. But there's no other word to describe it. Like, you'd say, well, I was in a controlling group, or I was in an authoritarian group. Or it was like, you know, a totalist group, you know, where they take up your whole life. But if you were use the word cult, everybody knows what you're talking about. And it's the same with nightmare. Like, nightmare is the only word that you can use to describe that. Like, you could say, I had a really scary dream. Or, I had this dream I woke up from, it was just awful. Well, you know, but if you use the word nightmare, everyone knows what you're talking about. So there's just some words. That's the only other word that I could think of that's that specific. Sue, I don't know where we stand time-wise.
Other questions?
Two more minutes? 2 minutes. Does anyone have a quick question? Otherwise, I'll just talk for 2 more minutes. Okay, this was an amazing journey. Anyone that's got a long dream journal, even if you're not going to give it up for statistics like I want to do, it's really valuable to transcribe it, especially if you remembered a lot of dreams. And when I turned 60, I knew I had all these boxes of dreams at UCSB, and I just wanted to use them for something. And then I found out how rare it is that someone would keep a dream journal that long, and how they don't use them, and there's no consensus on what dream journals are good for. And then I met Michael Schredl, and he introduced me to Kelly, to Bill Donhoff, and then I met Kelly Bulkley. So we're like the only people in the world that use dream journals, right? but it's really valuable if you have the time. I mean, this took me 160 hours to transcribe. So it was 40 hours, 40 hours, 40, 40, and then another 20. It's like it was just solid typing. So it takes a lot of energy, but I really recommend it.
Thank you.